You're listening to KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara, and I'm Jill Cloutier for Sustainable World. And on today's show, we're joined by two guests, Marcia Hansey and Margie Bushman. And I'll give you an intro on Marcia. Marcia is the founder of the first Brazilian Permaculture Institute in Bahia. Can you say that, Marcia, the right way?
Bahia.
Bahia, in Brazil. And the institute has been responsible for training numerous professionals in agroforest techniques and sustainable design, offering traineeships to students from around the world. And although Brazil is best known for its vast rainforests, it's also home to an immense semi-arid region, which as a result of bad land practices is growing rapidly. And we'll be talking about that today with Marcia. Marcia studied with permaculture founder Bill Mollison and also participated in the founding of the Brazilian agroforest movement. And in 2003, Marcia moved to a piece of bare sand in the Brazilian drylands, where she is now implementing the Maritza Epicenter for Culture and Agroecology. And this is a place that's open to courses and events, and it's nestled in a newly planted cashew-based agroforest. And our other guest today is Margie Bushman, and Margie is the co-director of the Santa Barbara Permaculture Network. And Margie's been a community organizer and activist for almost 10 years, and she has been successful in bringing dozens of the leading thinkers, teachers, writers, and lecturers in permaculture, natural building, and the environmental movement to Santa Barbara. Margie also is a writer and has written for local publications on those same subjects. So welcome to Sustainable World, both of you.
Thank you.
And what I would love to start with, Marcia, is how, maybe give us a intro to what you are doing in Brazil.
Well, today I'm actually starting off a new project on bare land, where we're building a center which is not only to produce food, but to produce, to have a good time, to have culture, to music, dance, and it's slowly transforming into a school.
So you're going to be teaching all of these techniques that you've learned over the years?
Well, actually, we're going to be practicing them. You know, it's our daily life now. Permaculture now is a style of life where every day, everything we build, everything we plant is within the principles of permaculture. So it's actually, it's a working farm, but it's a working farm based from the beginning on permaculture principles, sustainability.
Wonderful. Now, how did we get so lucky as to have you here in Santa Barbara?
My daughter studies in San Luis Obispo in West, and Margie heard that I was going to pass through, so here in Santa Barbara.
So Margie, you have been successful in bringing another amazing person to Santa Barbara.
Luckily, yes.
So let's start, Marcia. How did you get involved? I was fascinated when I read your bio on your website, and we'll give our listeners that information later on, but I was fascinated to hear about a woman that actually took permaculture to Brazil. And you were telling me in the car a little bit about how you actually, the government was very interested in permaculture. Maybe you could give our listeners a little bit of the history of how you got started in this and how you've affected the whole country, actually.
Well, actually, it all started when I was 10 years old. And I heard about kids living in boxes in the streets of São Paulo, Brazil. And when I was a kid in Florida. And this offended me so much that I said to my parents they should adopt these kids. And so then 30 years later, I found myself living in São Paulo. And I saw these kids on the street every day, and I realized that you can only get the kids off the street if you fix the countryside, because they're all rural refugees. So that's when I began to get interested. Why is there are there so many rural refugees in the city? And I came to the conclusion it's because we have the wrong agriculture model for the tropics. No? The agriculture model that we use is the European one with tractors and plowing, and this dries up our land. No? So we need really a completely different kind of agricultural model for the tropics, and that would be one based on trees. Yeah? And as permaculture talks about the production of food through productive ecosystems, really that's where we dovetailed permaculture with the agroforest movement of Brazil.
Now, did you find Brazil first, or did you find permaculture first?
I was already in Brazil. Mm-hmm. I was living in the country, and I had come to the conclusion that we should be working with trees. And through that, I discovered permaculture. And at the same time, I discovered the founder of the agroforest movement in Brazil, who's a Swiss man who lives in a cocoa farm in the south of Bahia. So actually, from the very first day, permaculture and agroforest have gone hand in hand with the Bahian Permaculture Institute. That's why in Brazil, many people think that permaculture is agroforestry, when actually it's a design system. which includes agroforestry as what part of the design. Yeah?
Now tell us, what is agroforestry?
Agroforestry is a form of producing food with a planted forest. Instead of taking away a forest and planting horizontal systems, we plant vertical systems based on tall trees, medium trees, low trees, vines, bushes, vines, but they're all planted by us. It's a completely human-made forest, mm-hmm. but it has the structure and the dynamic of a forest, and it has the stability of the forest, it has the productivity of a forest, practically zero cost, low maintenance, so it's a fantastic way to produce food, fantastic.
Very, very interesting. Now, was the agroforestry, was that happening in Brazil maybe a long time ago? What was the traditional type of agriculture practice there?
The traditional was the Indians practice, each tribe has its own tradition, and there's quite a lot of variance between them. There are tribes that don't even eat meat, mm-hmm. to give you an idea. They're completely different one from the other. But basically, they slash a piece of forest, burn it with a very cool fire. They don't burn it with hot fire like they do today, and so it's not so destroy the soil. And then they plant, and they use that space for about 3 years. And they plant the corn and beans, and then they plant cassava, which is less demanding of soils. And then they even plant fruit trees. There's one tribe, very interesting, that which actually plants fruit trees and uses that space as hunting grounds afterwards, because the animals are attracted to the fruits. So they don't go running through the forest, as we have this image with bows and arrows. They hide and wait for the animals to come to eat the fruits that they themselves planted. So it's a very interesting, very sophisticated form of agriculture. In fact, we suspect that the whole Amazon forest was a highly managed and developed agroforest system. It's not a wild forest. What you see as a mix of plants, etc., was highly managed by the Indians.
Wow, so it was actually designed almost.
Practically.
Wow. Yeah. Very interesting.
They had corridors through the forest, and the corridors were all planted with food so that they wouldn't have to carry foods with them. It's really, really incredible.
That is incredible. Yeah.
In the drylands, we don't really know what happened, because those Indians have been practically decimated, but we think they came into the drylands to hunt, because drylands are extremely rich in fauna, in edible fauna. Mm. So there are some areas where you have permanent water in the drylands, and they live there. Actually, 30 kilometers from where I live, there's still an Indian village. Mm. And they plant a very simple subsistence form of agriculture, and a lot of harvesting of the products from the woods.
Very interesting. So did this start to follow this traditional method of, it sounds like it was very sustainable, actually, what they were doing in the past?
Actually, the Indians are not sustainable if you make them stay in one place. Mm-hmm. They just, because they do clear cut, they burn, and so it becomes like a bare football field around their villages. If they're no longer permitted to migrate through the forest, then they destroy the land. So they're not sustainable either. Mm-hmm. Their original way of life was sustainable only because they moved through the forest.
And there was so much land available.
Yeah. So they are not, I've actually had Indians in my permaculture courses. It's really funny. In the end of one of the courses, this vice cacique, they're the chiefs, and he came to the permaculture party. They always drink a lot. Né? And he said, we're going to plant Indian agriculture. Now we're going to plant trees. Because they don't have the idea of planting trees. The trees were always there, mm-hmm. But now this particular tribe is called Xerenti, but they're very sort of leaders in the whole indigenous movement. They're getting together now, the Indians in Brazil, né? And begin to talk to each other. Né? And getting moving politically, né? And moving in this direction as well, creating a style of life which is appropriate for them. Actually, the mayor of the town where this other Indian village is near my place is wanting to invite me over there as well. So it's not really to teach them how to do it, but to help them adapt what they used to do when they had freedom of movement into a more sedentary mm-hmm. situation. Yeah.
So you're building the land up instead of depleting it and then moving on.
Absolutely. I love this word regeneration. Yeah? It's a regenerative agriculture. It's fantastic. It's very romantic to buy a piece of sand and recuperate it and make it into a Garden of Eden, which is my intention. Eh? It's very expensive and it's hard work, because you have 3 years. We had to work for 3 years before we had our first production, because in the first year, things didn't even sprout. But now you begin to see the land come alive and get vigorous, and things begin to grow. It's really marvelous, you know. But it's expensive, you know, in time and energy. And
well, it's a full-time, it's your job, right?
Yeah. But it's really fun. It's a lot of fun. What I think about permaculture is fun, you know. There's this new way of doing things. It's nice. It smells nice. You don't have to use chemicals. You know, something deep in us, in our soul, knows that it's wrong to use chemicals, you know. Nobody really feels good about using poison land, you know? There's something genetic in us. You know, we're not so far away from when we used to live integrated with the forest. We remember that at a cellular level. Mm-hmm. And so when we move back into that integration, there's something really profound that happens, that people really begin to be really happy. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine went to we work with 1,000 farmer families now, you know, teaching them this agroforest model. And a friend went to their festival, and she said it was so good to see so many happy farmers, you know, because they're happy. It smells good. It looks good. There's birds. There's butterflies. You know? So that's a big advantage of this agriculture model.
Well, our bodies, we can sense that it's safe and healthy and life-affirming. Yeah.
And actually, they're discovering so many diseases linked to microelements. You know, diabetes is zinc. Cancer is selenium. Lupus is molybdenum. What else? There's a practically unknown mineral called yttrium, which is related to all the nervous diseases like Alzheimer's. You know? So actually, they're beginning to link a lot of the degenerative diseases to the lack of these microelements in our food. And when you have an integrated ecosystem, you know, and the soil is rich and alive, then the food has all these microelements. So actually, eco-farming is the medicine of tomorrow.
It's from degeneration to regeneration.
Regeneration, exactly.
Yes. Well, Marcia, now you were in Sao Paulo. How did you, when you first went to is it the northeast of Brazil, the area that we're talking about, the semi-arid?
Where I live now is the northeast, just a bit above Salvador, which is a very well-known tourist city. Mm-hmm. Né? Salvador is very African in origin, but interior, where I live, the mythology says that these are actually refugees, Jews, who were refugees from the Inquisition. And so the symbol of the Northeast is the Star of David. Yeah. And we have trovadores there. So it's actually this European tradition from the 1500s, which still carries on today. Now, they do call it trovar, né? So it's a very old sort of medieval culture we have there. And the origin, nobody really knows. It's sort of secretive, you know, but it's very interesting. But it's not about our people are not of African origin.
It's, interesting. So it's it sounds like very eclectic. Like a mix,
very eclectic, and it has its own culture, its own music, its own poetry. It's a very rich culture. Eh? And what was the problem is that with the degradation of the soil, we were getting the degradation of the culture as well. And people were no longer believing in the sertão, which is the region it's called. They were migrating out to the big city. They were depressed. They thought it was a bad place to live. The kids think it's a bad place to live, that there's no future. Eh? And what we're actually turning all this around, not just the agriculture, but the faith in the culture and to really enjoy the richness of this culture. It's incredibly rich in music, in poetry, and
Now, when you first went to this area of Brazil, was it just seemed like a wasteland almost, or how did you respond when you first found this area where you're now living?
Well, I was living in Salvador, which is in the coastal rainforest. There's a thin strip of coastal rainforest along the east coast of Brazil, and then 1 hour into inland, you're into the drylands. Mm-hmm. And I've been working in the drylands professionally since the late 90s already. And we have actually a group of students who formed a Dryland Institute of Permaculture in the interior. Mm-hmm. So I actually had been in love with the drylands for many years before I actually moved out there. But then my kids left home and my marriage was winding down. So I wanted to go somewhere into the country. I didn't want to stay in the city. And as I'm in love with the drylands, I decided to go out to the drylands and just prove to everybody that it's really a good place for you to live. You know, you can have a Garden of Eden in the drylands.
You can
turn
thrive
around
and
this
prosper.
Attitude, you know, this bad attitude about the place. No? Mm-hmm. And actually, my neighbors, the vice director of the local school said, "You could live any place in the world you want to, couldn't you?" I thought, well, yes, I suppose I could. And you choose to live here? And I said, well, you don't know, this is one of the most beautiful places in the world. they don't realize what a beautiful, wonderful place it is, you know. It's an incredibly rich ecosystem, full of fruits and oils, medicinals. Aloe vera is native there, you know, just to give you an idea. No? So it's an incredibly rich ecosystem, no? And all we have to do is wake it up, you know.
Yes, and appreciate it and appreciate see it.
And learn to manage it. And learn to manage it, it's really sort of step by step. It takes a few years, you know. We've been doing it now for 3 years, and we're slowly approximating how we think that particular region should be handled. Because we have this polyculture project in another region, and the polyculture project is just taking off like wildfire. And I started working with 1,000 farmers this year, farmer families, because the women are involved, the kids are involved, and the government wants us to go to 3,000 next year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we're really getting large scale now, right, with that project. But that region has very good soils. The rains are a different time of the year, you know, so it's a completely different ball game from where I live. Mm. And that was my big shock, because I moved to where I lived and I thought I was going to get the same results. And it's taken 3 years to get the results they get in 1 year in the other region. But we're getting there. The neighbors noticed that now we're in the heart of the drylands. That's why I'm here. I'm running away from the heat and the drought, because there's not much to be done, and my team there is very, very competent. So no use hanging out there. And actually, my farm this year is much greener than around. You can actually, if you climb up the mountain, you'll see this little green square in the middle of the valley. So we're beginning to get the first results. What happens in the drylands, they lose 80% of the water. And we've created a system which captures all the water. So you're working with 80% more humidity than normal. Yeah? So they work with 20% of 500 millimeters. We work with 100% 500 millimeters. And that's an incredible increase in humidity.
Well, what a hopeful experience for those around you to see what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And then they can think, I'm sure, are you generating a lot of interest in actually people staying there now and
Absolutely.
Helping to...
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. There are a lot of young professionals flowing through as trainees, you know, from all over Brazil. And the neighbors are always looking over the fence, of course. Ever since I moved in there, they said she must have gone crazy to buy that piece of white sand. But actually, there were two cashew trees on the sand, and one of them, we call Grandfather, is 25 meters in diameter.
Wow.
If you can
imagine, definitely
25
a grandfather
meters,
tree.
25 meters is more than 25 yards. It must be about 30 yards in diameter, if you can imagine the size of this tree. Absolutely a giant. When I saw that tree, I said, oh, I can plant trees here. You know, they said, oh, she's crazy. Now she bought this white sand. It's only good for watermelons. It's not good for corn and beans, really, or any other crops, perhaps sesame. But I saw those trees and looked over the valley. The valley is lots of dark green trees. I said, well, I can plant trees here. Yeah? And really, the trees are beginning to take off now.
Yeah, so. That's so lovely. Yeah. And it sounds like, I know on your website it was saying that you just planted an agroforest of cashew agroforest?
Yeah, right. Cashew is native there, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a really funny story. When Africa and South America were the same continent, then they began to separate. And one little piece, which was supposed to be Africa, broke off and stayed behind. And that's where Salvador is. Okay. And that little rift between that piece and the mainland is where I live. It's a very sort of deep rift with lots of deep sands. Mm-hmm. And that's when cashew is native. So cashew is native to deep sands, you know? And so actually I'm working with a native plant, but it's incredible because it's immense. They're gigantic, you know? In most of the world, it's rather small, about the size of an apple tree, you know? But they're gigantic, and they give incredible production and incredible biodiversity. Actually, on my website, I wrote an article called Slow Cashews because, you know, the slow food movement appreciates the biodiversity, variety, etc. And if you go to an old cashew planting, you can find 9 or 10 different kinds of cashews, sour ones and sweet ones and red ones and white, yellow ones and big ones and delicious and insipid.
My favorite nut. I love them.
Absolutely fantastic and fantastic biodiversity. And now the government extension service has narrowed down this to a handful of selected varieties, which they plant, how do you call it, grafted, mm-hmm. plant on grafted trees. Okay, so they're actually diminishing tremendously, dramatically, the biodiversity available. The genetic pool is being whittled down. The trees are, the fruits are delicious, and they're dependable, because when you put a cashew nut in the ground, you don't know what kind of tree you get. because the bees, the bees mix them up. You know, they're cross-pollinated. So I'm going against the current because I'm actually planting seed of the giant cashew, and not these dwarf grafted cashews, no? To maintain the biodiversity, because I enjoy the biodiversity. Each one is good for something, you know.
Yes.
Some are good for making juice, others are good for drying, others are good for, you know. So we enjoy this biodiversity. No? Mm. The nuts are always the same, no? And the nuts have a very good market value. You just pick them up off the ground, put them in a bag, and sell them. So it's very low labor. No? And so it's in that case, it's quite a sustainable thing. I can actually get quite old there and still be able to harvest my cashew nuts. No? So my dream, I'm really preparing my retirement fund there, you know, because the governments are having financial problems. You know, I'm not sure that when I'm really old enough to receive a retirement fund, the government's still going to have money to pay it. So I'm going to take my little basket and be a little old lady and walk and say, good morning, what am I going to eat today? You know, and that's, I think that's sort of our dream, to low stress. We have a very slow rhythm of life, you know. No stress, no fear. It's actually eliminating fear from our lives, no? Living without stress, without fear, because you know that the system will always support you. You always have something to eat, and you'll always have something to sell.
Well, I definitely have more faith in the natural systems than the governmental systems, definitely. And yeah. If you're with the land and really doing this work, I could see how you would really feel you could trust and feel safe.
Yeah, exactly. I like to give a talk which is called The Old Paradigm, The New Paradigm. The old paradigm is the one based on fragmentation, control, and fear. And the new paradigm is based on trust and confidence. Confidence that the universe has enough for everybody, you know, based on enough. I used to say abundance. By abundance, no, it's really just to that sort of quiet serenity that, you know, there will always be enough, you know. There's enough today. It's not being distributed properly only. But, you know, the planet has enough. You know, we only eat 3 plates of food a day. And we only sleep in 1 bed a day. No? Actually, it's not that difficult to have enough for everybody. No? And so, and whereas the old paradigm is based on the idea of scarcity. I have to get it because there's not going to be enough. So I have to accumulate and, you know, and hoard and, you know, be afraid that if the others have it, then, you know, competition. If others have it, then I won't. You know, this... But this is sort of to have faith that the universe is an abundant place and things flow and, you know, and the key is community and, you know, just sharing and enjoying life. You know, this old paradigm is no fun. You know, it's no fun to go at 8 o'clock in the morning and come home at 6 at night in a job that you hate and put on a tie. And, you know, if you're passionate about it, that's wonderful. Yeah? So the old paradigm is to work hard, and the new paradigm is to work passionately. But if you're working passionately, you work hard.
I love
you
that,
work hard.
Marcia.
You work happy, but you work very hard.
Yes, you work hard, but it's something that feeds you deep in your soul.
Right. So this is what permaculture is really about. It's about bringing back a slower, more integrated lifestyle, né? Where things more or less function, where you don't have to control so much, where you don't have to manipulate so much, where you don't have to use such artificial systems to make things work.
Where we're in community not only with other humans, but also with all of life. I think it's very inclusive.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And I wanted to say, in case you just tuned in, this is Sustainable World on KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. And I'm Jill Cloutier, and on today's show, we're joined by Marcia Hansey and Margie Bushman. And Margie, would you like to add anything to our discussion?
No, that just the last couple of evenings at presentations that Marcia made, that showing her courses in her country and the beautiful abundance that showed up and the happy faces she described at these courses, it was just remarkable and beautiful. And showing this polyculture model, which looks so different than our agriculture. And I think it's very difficult for us coming from this country and the model that we use here to sort, you have to look at this over and over again to sink in and have the understanding of what she's showing you, this polyculture model. It was really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And Marcia, maybe you could explain to our listeners, what is polyculture? What does that term mean?
Well, polyculture, is the country of monoculture. But actually, our polyculture project that we're working with, we plant... We create a vertical system rather than a horizontal system. So on the same day you plant short cycle, we start with radishes. radishes, and then corn, beans, cowpeas, castor. So you have things which take 20 days, which take 3 months, which take 5 months, 1 year. So you plant all these together, and in the end, you have trees. Well, when you harvest, and 3 years from now, the first trees are beginning to produce the fruits. And then the farmer, he has the choice to either he can cut the trees down if he wants to go back to corn and beans, you know, and crops. He can cut the trees down, they will resprout. His field will be infinitely better mulched, and more because this vast root mat under the ground, which is very important in the drylands. And then he can start all over again, renovate the system, start all over again. Then he'll have a fantastic bumper crop. Or he can just move on, which actually our farmers prefer, just to move on and leave a very nice agroforest behind, leave a very nice orchard behind, lots of fruits. It's difficult to implant because it's lots of... it's difficult to get enough planting material together because it's so many things. It's 30 different plants in the same field, huh?
Very, very different from our
fields. So we start
fields,
with small areas, and just it's called rolling permaculture. Each year you plant another field. So you have one field which is 3 years old, which already has the fruits. 2 years old, which has a lot of animal fodder. 1 year old, has it, and each year that goes, then you have you add another plant to it. So it's functioning really well. But what's interesting is that the farmers are learning to make their own agriculture model. They're beginning to experiment. And actually, I would recommend anybody interested to read the book Two Ears of Corn by Ronald Bunch, because that's really the system we're using, the strategy.
So what was it, Roland? What is his last name?
Bunch, B-U-N-C-H, okay. Which is a really interesting book about the most efficient way to do agriculture extension work. And we've been following his recommendations, and it really does function to do one simple thing which really functions well and to stay at it and to reach a wide public. So we don't work with individual farmers. We work with farmers associations. It's always a group of 30 people. Because if the 30 are doing it, then they move together. Otherwise, if you have isolated persons, they will be rejected by the rest of the community. Either they will be a sort of foreign objects in their own community, or they will stop doing things which are actually successful because they don't want to be different from the rest. In these very traditional farming communities, it's very important to be part of the social fabric. So that's the way we've been working. It's been functioning very well. In the first area, we've been there about three to four years, we're actually being able to move out and leave behind the farmers who are trained in.
That's wonderful, Marcia. Now, what was the reaction when you first started teaching permaculture in Brazil? How did people react to it?
Oh, they get really excited. Brazilians are incredibly creative. And they have a lot of flexibility. You know, we've had two maxi devaluations since I've been there. We used to have 80% inflation per month. So the Brazilians are just so used to world in change that they're not afraid of change. They know that it can't go on the way it is. So they're not sort of comfortable. They get up and they move,
And they're not fixated in one place.
And they're not afraid of change. And I've seen incredible changes in people after doing the permaculture course. I calculate that some 600 people have done my basic course, which is a two-week course. And I don't know of anyone who's sitting at home saying, I can't do anything because I don't have a job. They're all out there moving somehow. If they don't find a job, they open an NGO, or they buy a piece of land, or they go on their uncle's land, or they go live with the Indians. So they just invent something, but they move. They move. And this has been so... In Brazil, I did the first course. I think I was the first person from Brazil to do the course. I did it in 92. In 95, I was giving permaculture courses through the Ministry of Agriculture all over the pre-Amazon in a program called Frontiers of New Cooperativism. Today, only 10 years later, we're in 2006, from 1992 to 2006, it's not even 15 years, we have 11 institutes. It's just incredible, incredible, né? And there are other people who came there to Brazil as well. I'm not the only one who started the movement. I was the first one. There are other people who have come as well. Ali Sharif has been there, Andres Soares. There have been other key people who have come from outside who began this work. And it's really interesting that they have concentrated on sustainable building. And we have concentrated on sustainable agriculture, food production. So actually, these two movements have been sort of complemented each other in their area of expertise. But both are working with the basic permaculture course. So this has been really good. So they're getting the architects and we're getting the agronomists and the extensionists. And this has been really, really, very, really vibrant. It's a really vibrant, loving country. You know, we dance a lot, we sing a lot in the courses, we laugh a lot, and we meditate a lot, which is interesting because the Brazilians are very open to the spiritual aspect of things. You know? Even a farmers, when the farmers get together, they always say the Lord's Prayer because before they have their meeting, even if it's a budget meeting. You know, so they just the spiritual aspect is always present. They're not afraid of the invisible world. You know. That's the world of Macumba.
That's what my friends from Brazil, I've always felt so at home with them because they said that it's just side by side. It's not the separate, you know, spirituality is not a separate thing there.
No.
It's just an accepted, it's just another aspect of life.
It's just normal. Yeah. It's just a normal aspect. So this has been really sort of, I think the place where the permaculture most found itself at home because they're so holistic in this style of life by nature, yeah? In the north, from Sao Paulo on up, in the south, no. In the south, they're more German origin, and they're a little more technical, and they reject more this side, the people who come from the south. But from the people from Sao Paulo on up to the north, northeast, they're all, because of the strong African influence, strong Indian influence, and strong natural influence, just to live in an ecosystem like that, which is so strong, so vibrant, it's so cosmic, you know? Mm-hmm.
A big biodiversity of cultures.
Yes, yes, of cultures. Exactly, of cultures and of nature, you know. I lived in a rainforest 1 hour away. I was in the drylands, you know. There's this incredibly strong ecosystems, you know, untamed wildness, you know.
Margie, would you go on the computer? It's right here. And look up Expedia tickets to Brazil for us so we can go. it sounds wonderful. So what, Marcia, how did you go, you took your permaculture course and then you were all of a sudden teaching classes with the Ministry of Agriculture? How did you make that, how did you do that?
No, actually, I started working in the green movement and with organic agriculture, organic gardening before coming to Brazil. I've been here for 30 years, no? In Switzerland. I was part of the beginning of the green movement in Switzerland before I moved to Brazil. And my husband is Swiss. Then when I was in Sao Paulo, I tried, we bought a weekend farm like everybody does. In Brazil, you know, land is cheap and everybody to escape the city has a weekend farm. And so like the Russians do, you know. And so I began to apply organic agriculture as I had learned in Europe. And I'd come to the conclusion that we should work with trees. And so I had come to this conclusion from my own experience. And then I discovered permaculture, which at the time I mistakenly thought to be agroforest, mm-hmm. as many people do. And I read the book Permaculture 1, which is Permacultura 1, had been translated into Portuguese. And then I moved to exactly that. I lived 2 years on the land trying to apply this. You know, we planted the land entirely with fruit trees, but wrongly, because I had no one to orient how to do it, you know. So I made these vast holes in this hard clay, and I filled with manure, and things grew for 1 year until they spent the manure, and then everything died. So I made this tremendous effort. Then I moved to Bahia, and then I met Ernst Gertz, who is the founder of the Brazilian Agroforest Movement, who has a whole strategy of implementing, which we use today, you know. And then I learned how to do it within the rhythms of nature, within the succession of nature, you know. So actually, I'd been working with organic agriculture in trees quite a bit before hearing about permaculture. Mm-hmm. And then I looked for a permaculture teacher in Brazil, didn't find one, so I went to Hawaii, because in Hawaii is more tropical. Né? So I did the course in Hawaii with Max Lindegger and Lee Harrison. And the next year, Bill Mollison and Scott Pittman came to Brazil. So I did the course with them. I actually translated the course for them because they didn't have enough money to pay a translator. And then we brought in Yanto Evans and Alejandra Caballero, who are two of the shining lights of working with peasants. And then recently I also did the course with Penny Livingston Stark mm-hmm. here in California. Just sort of a brush up to see her, you know, to be a student again after all these years. And so actually I had quite a strong background in organic agriculture before I got into permaculture. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you approached the government of Brazil with permaculture, did they just say, God, that sounds great? How did that...
No, they approached me, actually.
Oh. Yeah. And they had heard about it and wanted to implement it?
Yeah, what had happened is that they heard about permaculture and they brought in a teacher from outside. And I went to... They called me in to translate for this other teacher and they discovered I was already doing it. And, you know, our institute was already several years old, so they said, well, why do we bring in people from outside? So then they contracted us. I did it only for 1 year because I couldn't take the rhythm. I was a mother. I had three adolescent kids at home. I couldn't spend the 1 week of the month traveling to these incredibly remote places. You know, it was just, no. So the next year, a younger colleague of mine took up. The program lasted for 3 or 4 years. So a large number of farmers in the pre-Amazon region have received the permaculture course.
That is amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah. We were astonished, too. You know, I did the course in 92. This was 95.
Wow.
In 3 years, we were in the Ministry of Agriculture. It was just a miracle. There was a mover and shaker within the ministry who really caught on that this was really important for Brazil. And he was able to move things around and to get this program off the ground. It lasted only 4 years. Then for political reasons, you know, that whole government thing. Yeah, but it got it going faster than it might have. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So in the space of very few years, permaculture has had a tremendous impact.
Mm. Margie, who do you think could be our U.S. permaculture minister?
we're getting to be as diverse here as what Marsh is describing in Brazil. It's in Santa Barbara area. We have some excellent teachers. And we're hoping to, we'll never have enough, you know, and we can have more and more. But last summer, Larry Santoyo taught the first permaculture design course in Santa Barbara.
Wouldn't you love to see a meeting with Larry Santoyo, Dick Cheney, and George Bush?
That would be interesting. That would be very interesting. But we have lots of things coming up. And Larry's taken things down to Los Angeles and urban permaculture, taking it down that way. And then next summer we have a course in the dry lands up above Ojai at Quail Springs Learning Center and Permaculture Farm. And they'll be teaching a course there. And it looks like there are things all over the Southland beginning to happen. So lots of ways to dip into this thing called permaculture and learn about it in whatever your area of interest is.
And how would you advise someone that is listening to the program and is thinking, like, God, I'd want to get involved in this here? What do you think would be a good first step for them?
Well, Santa Barbara Permaculture Network has a website, sbpermaculture.org, and we list all of the courses. There's a newsletter and a calendar. And as I said, so much is happening now that that's good to go there first. Larry Santoyo is at www.earthflow.org. Quail Springs is quailsprings.org. Those would be good places. Mm-hmm. There's another course happening down in the Los Angeles area, an urban permaculture course with Scott Horton and others. But our website is a good reference point.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thanks, Margie. Now, what we can do is let's take a short music break, and then we will be back. You're tuned into Sustainable World on KCSB 91.9 FM. And my guests today are Margie Bushman from the Santa Barbara Permaculture Network and Marcia Hansey. And I hope I'm saying, is your last name, is that right, Marcia? Marcia Hansey, and she is a Brazilian permaculturist who is visiting Santa
Barbara.
Actually,
I'm American.
She's an American.
Been in Brazil for 30 years.
Yeah, been in Brazil for 30 years. We'll be right back after this song. Thanks for tuning in.
Tá fazendo 1 ano e meio, amor, que o nosso lar desmoronou. Meu sabiá, meu violão e uma cruel desilusão foi tudo que ficou. Ficou pra machucar meu coração. Tá fazendo 1 ano e meio, amor, que o nosso lar desmoronou. Meu sabiá, cruel desilusão foi tudo que fiz. ficou pra machucar meu coração. Quem sabe não foi bem melhor assim. Melhor pra você e melhor pra mim. A vida é uma escola que a gente precisa aprender. A ciência de viver pra não sofrer.
Listening to KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara, and I'm Jill Cloutier for Sustainable World. And my guests today are Margie Bushman of the Santa Barbara Permaculture Network and Marcia Hansi, a permaculture teacher from Brazil. And Marcia, we did have a question during the break, and I'm sorry I didn't give the phone number out. Next time I definitely will. But the caller wanted to know, how did you come up with the grouping of seeds that you talked about, how you planted them together? How did you know, you know, what seeds would enhance each other, and how did you come up with that grouping?
Well, actually, in part, we experimenting over two or three years in observing what goes well together. But what we do, we plant the traditional crops in the field. For example, we know corn, beans, and pumpkins, etc. We know what grows well in that region. And for example, you put exactly the number of corn plants in the mix that you want in that field, as if it were a monoculture field, and the number of beans as if it were a monoculture bean field. You actually calculate how many seeds of each type. Otherwise, one plant may dominate another. The corn definitely dominates. Now, sesame dominates if you're not careful. So you have to have very few sesame seeds. And then at the same time, you can plant practically just as many trees as you want. It's almost never too many trees. Now, tree seeds in the mix, because you can always cut them as mulch later. Now, you want to have a large mix of trees so you can select the very best trees to stay in the system. Mm. So we mix all those together, and then we mix those with dirt to have a rather large mix, because some of the seeds are very tiny, like the radish seeds. And then you divide that up to know exactly what size a handful to put in each linear yard of furrow. And then we make furrows and spread the seeds. And then we also plant the field completely with cactuses and agaves and bromelias. We use aloe vera. We use nopal, and we use sisal. You can use the tequila plant as well. You know, one of these families at every meter, one of these plants. Okay, to mark the field. So then we have this permanent structure with these plants before the trees take over, and that's the model. If actually they can look at www.permacultura-bahia.org.br and they can see photographs. Or if you Google polycultures, you'll come to this site and you can see pictures of the process.
Great. That's great. Thank you. Now, I know we wanted to talk about the International Permaculture Conference that's being held in Brazil in May of this year. Can you tell us about that, maybe Margie and Marcia?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be incredible because Brazil has so much going on. I think anybody who wants to come to Brazil, they should come with plenty of time to actually travel around and visit. There's an official tour. But besides the official tour will only cover a very small number of the sites. No? So Brazil is really a fantastic place for you to come, and it's going to be a meeting of people who practice permaculture from all over the world. I went to the 95 meeting in Denmark, and it's absolutely a life-changing experience. You meet people from Africa, from Asia, and from all over, no? And of course lots of Brazilians. And Brazil is such an interesting country to visit anyway. No? So the Congress... There's the conference in São Paulo, né, in the city, about green economy, né, alternative banks, etc. And then there's the convergence for people who actually practice permaculture in a permaculture site near Brasilia. Né.
Mm-hmm. And so you can do, could you do one or both, or most people are
yes.
doing both?
Yes, you can.
Wow. Yeah. And Margie, you're going to this, right?
Yes, Wes Rowe and I, Wes is the co-founder of Santa Barbara Permaculture Network, and I are going. And we attended the last international conference in Croatia and began to meet many of the others and decided to sort of help out with some of the organizing of this one. And this is the 8th International Permaculture Conference, and we hope to help make sure that they happen every 2 years. There had been a six or seven year lapse between the sixth and the seventh conference, so that's a hope. But we're very excited to go to Brazil.
Yes, and I guess what else, Marcia, would you advise people that are going to this conference to come to go visit, to go see, to get a good idea of what's happening with permaculture in Brazil?
Well, actually, we have a network called Permear, which means to permeate, né? P-E-R-M-E-A-R, né, Permear. And we have this is a group of more than 40 professionals in permaculture, and we have a very good site with a map on it. And so you can go into www.permear.org.br, and then you can see all the stuff that's going on in Brazil, all the places, the contacts, and then there's just, it's going to be difficult for people because Brazil is an immense country. It's larger than the United States. And these institutes, there's one institute in every region. Even though our institute was the first, we called it the Bahian Institute because we thought there should be an institute in every region. We didn't call ourselves the Latin American or the Brazilian, actually, because it was founded before PAL. Now, our institute is older than PAL, the Permaculture America Latina. Now. But we thought we should call it a local because we think the institute should be local. So in Brazil, this has happened. And this is in every region there's a permaculture institute. But you can travel 30 to 40 hours to get from one to the other. What I recommend to people who might want to go is to buy one of those plane tickets. It's like those plane tickets where you can visit a number of cities for a very low price. You have to buy it outside of Brazil. In Brazil, traveling is very expensive. Okay, buses are very good. Planes are very good. You know, it's quite a sophisticated country. It's very well organized. Né? It's not very third world. I don't think Brazil, for me, is not a third world country. So if they buy one of these sort of plane tickets, then they can actually go and visit all these different regions because each region is so unique and each institute is so unique because each group of people who founded the institute have had their own reasons for founding. Né? So each one has its own personality. And it's absolutely fabulous. So they can go into this network. This page, we're actually translating it into English now, www.permear.org.br, and then they can see all the different things that are going on in Brazil.
That's wonderful. I know I saw, actually, and I don't know if that was the site I was on last night, but I saw a map of Brazil, and it showed all the different permaculture.
Yes.
Yes, and it was. Right. I was amazed. There's so much going on.
Yeah. Yeah, there is.
So what, Marcia, what are you doing next? Are you heading back to Brazil? And what are you going to be working on there? And say hi to the grandfather cashew nut tree for me, please.
Well, you know, I'm a pioneer species. You know, one of those first weeds that comes up, you know. So as I planted the first seed of permaculture in Brazil. Now it's well established. So now it's time for me to start something new. So I'm beginning to move into the question of the new paradigm in schools. Because you can see that schools are old paradigm as well. It's based on fear, based on control, based on, you know, you don't give freedom to the kids. You know, it's completely undemocratic, you know. We say it's a democracy, but the kids live under a complete fascist regime where they have no choice over their lives, you know. And so there's a school called Sudbury, which is absolutely fabulous. There are about 40 schools under the Sudbury. Sudbury is American in Massachusetts, no? There are other schools similar. I'm moving in this direction. And actually, we'll be receiving our first 5 students next year. Mm-hmm. These are kids who are repeating the second grade for the third time, you know, but they're actually intelligent and artistic, but just can't be bothered to learn sitting down, you know. And the Secretary of Education is really interested. It's a municipal school, so it makes it very easy. And there's a possibility of transforming one of the smaller schools the following year, if it's a success. I want to prove that these kids are going to learn much more. They're learning on their own and you know, studying what's interesting to them and teaching each other and more informal and with a larger, tremendous range of activities. Imagine if they're there. It's a working permaculture farm. So we're building cisterns and we're planting and we have animals and, you know, there's a lot of books and a lot of DVDs and a lot of artistic materials, and they can just sort of use all of it and just explore to their content. You know? Mm. And so that's the direction I'm going now, because permaculture, they don't need me anymore. they've got the more competent administrators, and you know, I'm the one who's sort of out there opening the way for so my next task is that. But it is a working, living permaculture farm, so we're always practicing permaculture. That's the basis. I came to the conclusion this year that we produce food not to just produce food. We produce food to feed artists. So now we're bringing the artists in. So that's why I call it the epicenter, because epicenter is the center of an earthquake, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Epicenter of culture and agroecology.
That's wonderful. And you'll be tending little children seedlings now instead of plant seedlings, both.
Yes.
Oh, that's lovely. Yes. That sounds wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us all the way from Brazil. This has been wonderful.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you
for
inviting us.
And thanks, Margie, so much. And
I thought I would just give the website for the international conference, and that's www.ipc8.com. .org. And there is a permaculture design course that you can take before going to the conference. In fact, in order to attend, you need to be a graduate of a design course, but you can do that before you go. So again, that website's www.ipc8.org.
Thank you so much.
www.marcia.com.br.
So that's www.marcia.com.br. Okay, great. Thank you so much, Marcia and Margie. And you've been tuned in to Sustainable World on KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. I'm Jill Cloutier. I'll be back next week. And thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.